Geekville Radio.
Hello, once again, you geeks and geekettes. Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio. We got a action-packed, supersized show for you here. We're going to be talking Marvel MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, for the majority of this show and where they might be going, because some people are still in that lull from Avengers Endgame and the epilogue that is Spider-Man Far From Home. So we do have a lot to talk about that. We're going to have one other subject before that. Before we get to our first subject, which will be the potential new 007, I want to introduce my usual co-host for Geekville Radio from the nice soft padded cell in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. Are we jam-packed or is it more of a 64-page giant-sized double issue?
I think the latter is probably more appropriate, because before we get to the Marvel talk, because I was all ready to finalize the show notes for this show, which you can find at geekvilleradio.com/239. But then the news hit about the long-rumored next 007 with the James Bond movie that's coming out. It's going to be the 25th one. We thought for a while, we meaning fans, not necessarily you and me per se, but the thought was that Daniel Craig might be replaced. And now we're hearing that that may be the case and that there would be a new 007. But the twist here, and the reason why I wanted to talk about this, is it fits with what we talk about when we say reinventing characters. The whole idea is that this is not going to be a new James Bond. It is going to be a new person in the 007 designation. And that character will be played by Lashana Lynch, who fans enjoyed earlier this year in Captain Marvel as Maria Rambo. So we're getting the change of gender, change of ethnicity and all that. But we say that, gender and ethnicity might not be important to a lot of characters. But I think this is an example of that. Like, they're doing what Marvel tends to do when Marvel revamps a character. You know, they're putting a new character into the same role. I mean, you think it's fair to say that? Because that's the way I see this.
Yeah, I mean, I have real mixed feelings on this because I have read the source material. I've read the Ian Fleming novels. James Bond has always been a white heterosexual male. There have been those in the James Bond fandom that have argued, well, James Bond isn't really a person. It's just a code name. That was kind of their way of explaining how James Bond has remained young for, 40 plus years in the movies now?
Right.
And has had multiple actors portraying him, is that it is a different person. It's just, and I'm like, well, no, if you read the source material and kind of what they say in the movies, the 007 is more important than the name. The 007, of course, is the code designation he has from MI6. And if you know the mythos of James Bond, the 00 designator before anything is the designator that MI6 gives, that is the quote-unquote license to kill.
Yes.
Meaning they can kill if necessary to do the job.
Right, because I saw Dr. No at a young age. It's one of those things, whenever I try to get into something, I go all the way back to the beginning. And I remember clear as day watching that on a beta VCR circa 82 or 83, hearing that that explanation. So, yeah, I know where you're coming from there.
And you have to remember, though, as far as source material goes with James Bond, Fleming only wrote, I think, like 5 or 6 novels. So the first 5 or 6 movies are essentially the Sean Connery stuff. That is, the Dr. No from Russia with Love, I think, The Spy Who Loved Me, Goldfinger, The Man with the Golden Gun. I think those are the ones that he wrote, which I find interesting. Side note here, Fleming had said publicly when he wrote The Man with the Golden Gun, he had always envisioned that character as Christopher Lee. And then, of course, Christopher Lee wound up being cast as that character. So he always wanted to be a Bond villain. I think Christopher Lee had even politicked to be the Blofeld character. And, of course, that went to Donald Pleasance.
Right.
And then he heard the rumor about how, and so he got to be a Bond villain anyways. And I think we can agree anything with Christopher Lee as a villain was probably pretty good, you know?
Right.
So
right. Anyway. It kind of gets that thing like we talk about with Sam Elliott as a cowboy, you know, it automatically goes up about, two or three points in the,
exactly.
in the scale.
And then flash forward, of course, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, that, you know, the Christopher Lee was actually John Carpenter's first choice to play play Dr. Loomis in the original Halloween. And that fell through. And it was his suggestion that Donald Pleasance take the role because both he and Peter Cushing were both a little too big at that point and out of the price range. Because people have to remember how the original Halloween was a low budget independent film. So
right.
Donald Pleasance was the most expensive actor on that set. And so, you know, the favor kind of got returned in a strange way. So there's your connection between James Bond and Halloween. I know you never thought that connection would ever be made, but
well, since we're at it and making connections here, I always figured the different actors, I think, the British filmmakers just thought, well, it worked for Doctor Who. Let's just recast it. And there we also got our obligatory Doctor Who reference out of the way as well.
Very early on in the episode, folks. But back to James Bond. So I think, you know, you do have to realize that once you got past like Goldfinger, Man the Golden Gun, you were into whole new realms. It was essentially screenplay writers writing screenplays based in a world and on a character that had already been previously created in novels by Ian Fleming.
Right.
Now, that can change a little bit because if you think about it, some of the early Daniel Craig stuff was reboots and remakes like Casino Royale, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they were remakes of the earlier novels.
Because kind of like in 83 when Sean Connery did Never Say Never Again, maybe it was 84, but that is actually an unofficial Bond film. It does not fall into that
non-canon.
Albert Broccoli line. Right. And that was actually, I think, a remake of, I want to say, Thunderball.
It was one of the, that was about the time that discussion started of, well, James Bond's just a code name. My retort to that has always been, if you read the novels, James Bond actually is a person because they bring up that it was either his father or his grandfather worked for the British government in the precursor to MI6, which I think was MI5 or something like that. And his name was Campion Bond. So yeah, James Bond was never a codename. It was a real person. You just kind of have to accept when you watch the movies that they're playing loose and fast with timelines. You know, that's part of being a moviegoer.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a matter of fact, since we are on Geekville, to throw comic books into this, when Alan Moore was writing the wonderful League of Extraordinary Gentlemen storylines, there is a mention of and an appearance of Campion Bond in one of those. And
okay.
So he appeared a young Campion, like pre-married to James's mother. Campion Bond appears as a contact of the British government to, I want to say Captain Nemo, maybe it was Mina Harker. But if you understand the premise behind those comic books, it is Alan Moore taking classic literature characters and making them superheroes and in a much more realistic setting. And the first and most popular of all those took place in late Victorian England. So if you understand the time setting of when Fleming wrote the James Bond stuff, his father probably would have been a young 20 something man starting out his professional career in around turn of the century. Because James was probably born in you know, the if you follow in the real timeline, the 30s, probably, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can buy it. And Alan Moore, if you know that particular title, he really did his research because he brought up some obscure literary characters to put in those books. So, I mean, even he remembered Campion Bond. So there you go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always been my argument against no, James Bond is not a code name. But if you're going to reimagine the character, I think you're right. For the horror analogy, and this is even before the Victor Miller lawsuit, with Friday the 13th, it had evolved to the point where Friday the 13th wasn't even that really a big deal. The date itself was not that big a deal to the movies towards the end of the run. It was more about just Jason, to the point where the last few movies, they emphasized Jason more than they did Friday the 13th,
right.
You know, especially once it got out of Paramount's hands. Think about it. It was Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday, Jason X, Freddy versus Jason. It wasn't about Friday the 13th anymore. You know, so I think that might be the scenario they want to go with in their marketing here. It's how I'd go. It's in the same universe, and it emphasized the 007 is more important than James Bond. If you want to keep James Bond, the character himself, a sacrosanct thing, entity, you know, that's how I would market it. That's how I would present it on screen. I think you understand where I'm going with that and why I'm going that way.
Yeah. I think I do. How I have said when it comes to stuff like this, and we've talked about it all the past times we see about characters getting recast or revamped, that I think the best way to do it would just have a different character, a spinoff character, probably the best way to put it. You know, maybe this isn't even 007. This could be, you know, 009 or 011 or something like that. Somebody that is in that same world, because Fast and Furious definitely showed that we can have spinoffs and recasts and things like that. And we'll probably get to Fast and Furious a little later as far as comparisons. But I always thought that that would be the best. But if you're not going to do that, then simply having somebody else take the mantle of 007, that's the next best thing than just waking up and saying, oh, you know what? James Bond is a woman now.
Right. And I can't say I'm shocked this is being done. I mean, you know, I can be honest. We are both middle-aged, white, heterosexual Christian men, which makes us the most evil person that could be alive in a lot of people's eyes in today's political climb. So removing
satire,
all
folks.
Those things. So removing all that from James Bond in today's political, social climate is not shocking, you know. and quite frankly, you know, I was impressed with what she did in Captain Marvel. I thought she was better than Brie Larson. So I think she'll do fine with the role. I think she can lead a movie. She'll be believable as an action heroine. If you're going to do it, just do it that way. And I will withhold judgment to see how they handle. I mean, and I have no problems with them killing James Bond, the person, off. And that leaves the 007 designator open and it can be reassigned by the British government. That makes sense too. I don't want them to kill off James Bond. You know, I would hate for him to do that, but he could also retire too. That's something that if you don't read the novels, you don't know he does retire. The only reason James Bond even becomes a member of Her Majesty's Secret Service is because his wife dies. That's covered pretty well in Casino Royale in the book, you know?
Okay.
That's his whole motivation. And the reason he's a bit of a womanizer and the reason he seems to be almost aloof and flippant in his attitude is a person who works in the mental health field can say the way that Ian Fleming wrote him in the novels, he was, I would almost say, suicidal without knowing he was suicidal. He just didn't care anymore, you know? So he was willing to take the biggest risks possible to get the job done. Cause he was kind of like, you know, if it works out, great. If I die, I don't care. Cause I have nothing to live for anyways. And then as the character evolved in the novels, the government itself and the country and the freedoms that he was protecting for the world became his motivation to live. So he changed a little bit. And I think that's any good character's dynamic like that. They change over time.
So we're going to ease into Marvel here for our next topic. But I figured I would make the analogy like we were talking about to give some Marvel analogies. I mean, the character of Jim Rhodes, you know, currently played by Don Cheadle in the MCU, that character was created so there was a black Iron Man while Tony took a back seat, you know, took a sabbatical for a while. In the comics, the current female Iron Man, Riri Williams, is mentored by Tony. So that's the comparison that I mean when I talk about how this is how Marvel does it. And so this is why I think it's good that they're doing it this way. So there's countless more. I mean, Captain America, Spider-Man's and stuff like that. But that's why I thought it was relevant.
Yeah, I think if you are a true comic book fan, that very famous line at the end of the first Iron Man movie where Tony says, "I am Iron Man," it has a much deeper meaning. Like you're saying, yeah, there's all these other characters in the comics that have Stark technology and have armored suits, but there's only one Iron Man. I think you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's not taking anything away from Riri or from Rhodey. I actually like both those characters, you know, a lot.
I love War Machine. Yeah.
Oh, I love War Machine. Exactly. But they're not Iron Man. There is only one Iron Man and it is Tony Stark.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into Marvel Phase 4. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for a gaming-themed podcast? Then check out You Just Got Fragged. Join host Jared Aubrey and his panel of gaming enthusiasts as they discuss news and accomplishments in the gaming world, and of course, the gripe of the week. That's all at YouJustGotFragged.com, part of the Wrestling Brethren podcast family.
All right, we're back. And as we talked about in the beginning, we're going to be talking Phase 4, Avengers Endgame, one of, if not the most successful movie of all time, depending on how you look at it. And I think to lead into this discussion here, Train, I figured we'd just kind of take a look at some of the major players in Marvel movies at the moment and kind of where they stand as it comes to, as of the end of Spider-Man Far From Home. Does that sound okay to you? And then we can build our speculation on there.
Yeah, exactly. And caveat to the listeners, I have not seen Far From Home, and Seth has, so we're going to try to keep this spoiler free. I know when we get into the talk later, we're going to bring up some actors that are in other things that I have seen that Seth hasn't finished yet, so we'll also try to keep that spoiler free for Seth as well as for me and for y'all, the listeners, too. So anyway.
Right. Yeah, the way I like to say it is I don't like talking hard spoilers when we talk about stuff like that. There is going to be rumors. There is going to be a lot of speculation because that's what we like to do. You know, we'll do what any rational thinking geek will do. We're going to lay out our own conclusions and then we're going to yell and scream when they aren't meant to the latter. And,
you know, we don't hide the fact at the end of the day, we are both fanboys and this is a fanboy podcast.
Right.
It is what it is.
So the first one that everybody knows, Iron Man / Tony Stark, sacrificed himself in the finale to Avengers Endgame. Anybody who reads comics can tell you nobody stays dead in comics. Well, except for Thunderbird, but he's still dead. But
Thomas and Martha Wayne.
Okay, yeah, you got a point there. Yeah.
Well, even there, Thomas is and Martha are alive in an alternate universe, and he is Batman. So I guess I'm wrong there too.
Right, which means in some reality, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is Batman. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, but, yeah. Negan is married to anyway.
So I would not be terribly surprised to see Tony back in some capacity, even if it's a flashback or a cameo or that alternate universe. I do think the chances of him back full time are pretty slim, though. You know, slim at best.
I think if for nothing else, I think RDJ I think he feels very fulfilled with what he brought to the role. It is something if he did nothing else, and he's done a lot else in his career, obviously, he could hang his hat on and it would be considered and remembered. It's a legacy, you know?
He was the heart of that franchise.
Mm-hmm. But I think that he, as most actors or anybody who's creative, feels it's time to move on and challenge himself with other things.
Right.
I don't feel that he feels he could bring anything else to the role, personally. Especially with that send-off. That send-off he got is the... Do you get a more heroic send-off than that?
I know, maybe Yondu and... Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you know?
and it still had Tony's a bit of selfish... self-centeredness when he repeats the line, "I am Iron Man." just as I'm taking out the biggest baddie in all the universe, I don't want to remind him just who's doing it to him, you know.
Right now, Steve Rogers, the last scene we saw him dancing with Peggy Carter. I know fans have objected, saying that Cap would never do that in the comics, which
bull crap.
Well, I would say that it's might technically be true, but the unfortunate truth in life is actors age in the real world. This character was going to go off eventually or be recast. So for telling the arc that they did for a movie that is going to be shown in the real world, I thought it was perfectly fine and well within what Cap would do because he already knew the world was going to be in safe hands for the next 70 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, where we saw him last, he is chronologically, he's what, 100 years old now?
Probably,
And I think he's born in like 1919 or 1918.
Yeah, July 4th, 1918 is his birthday. Yes, I know that.
101 then, okay?
Right.
Realistically, but I mean, we know, yes, he has a super soldier serum, but he has now aged to where he looks like he's in his, what, mid to late 70s?
So even if he is 100 years old, he looks like an old man, just not nearly as old. He looked like a 70-year-old guy who's taking care of himself.
But once again, he does have the super soldier serum. So we don't really know. I have a bet that 75-year-old looking Steve Rogers probably could still whoop the butt of most 30 and 40 year old guys. We don't know the long term effects of the super because he's the only one that's ever had the full thing work right. So we don't know. But I'm just speculating here, folks.
Yeah. I think the most we would ever get of Cap again is if there is some sort of period piece or some sort of time travel episode where there's a cameo. He's Cap one more time for an action sequence and then, you know, ducks away again.
Yeah, the only other thing I could even see, and I don't know if they'd go there, I guess it would depend on Chris Evans, which I don't think he'd be opposed to it, but I know he's really said he wants to move into this internet political website he's wanting to do. But I could see him in the makeup again as an old Steve Rogers, maybe giving that sage-like advice to a younger member, like a one-off scene, you know?
Sure.
A Peter Parker or a Stephen Strange, or even more fittingly, a Bucky or a Sam coming to him and go, what would you do here?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that'd be perfect.
And it could be in a setting like we saw him at the end of Endgame, like on the shores of a lake. I could even see him. I could see a Sam or a Bucky showing up at that old, you know, 1950s house, which Steve probably kept exactly the same, knocking on the door, and he invites him in and has a cup of coffee with him. And there's pictures of Peggy and him up on the mantle. I think that would be nice. And they could do something like that, too.
Sure. So rounding out the big trio of Avengers, Thor, he is, of course, still with us. We last saw him blast off with the Guardians of the Galaxy. He even made an Asgardians of the Galaxy joke, which, for those that don't know, is an actual title published by Marvel.
Yes, it
and,
is.
And
this you is sure that's Thor and not Big Lebowski?
Right.
I'm just saying.
And even before it got confirmed later on about Thor, I don't think we had to worry about Thor coming back. I mean, he's not going to be leading his people for a while. He can continue his big screen adventures, whether it's a solo film and or Guardians 3. So we're definitely getting more Thor.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that was in kind of in question for a while. Chris Hemsworth had been pretty public about saying he wasn't very happy at how Thor had been depicted through the first two standalone movies and through the first Avengers movie. He felt that the character was very static, and he had gotten into reading some of the comics, and Thor Odinson in the comics was not a static character. He was dynamic. He had changed. And then, you know, Taiki Waititi came on and gave that little comedic spin. I think what they've done with the character ever since Ragnarok, actually, you can go all the way back to probably Age of Ultron, and you can start to see a little bit of change there, you know, and all leading to where we are now. I think that made Chris Hemsworth happy, and it was that same thing that we were talking about with RDJ. Now he feels he has, as an actor, he has places he can go to develop this character he didn't have before. And I don't think he feels like he's completely fleshed out that character yet. So I think from I don't want to speak for Hemsworth. I just kind of get that vibe based on what he said publicly, you know?
Yeah, I do too. Bruce Banner / Hulk. He has learned to control himself to the point where he has the best of both worlds, Professor Hulk, whatever you want to call it. Allegedly,
awesome.
I agree. Yeah, that was the Hulk that I liked reading in the 90s. But allegedly, only Universal can make a Hulk standalone movie, and that's why he's always been in a
supporting role.
Right. You know, an entourage, I guess is the word I'm looking for, you know, and an all-star cast and such. But still, with Hulk likely staying Hulk full time, this opens up the door, in my view, that if Mark Ruffalo were to bow out, you can easily recast the character because he's fully CGI all the time now.
But you also have the fact that this, for the first time ever, especially now that he's Professor Hulk, it's still Ruffalo's voice. And they've always used Ruffalo for the mocap. So
right.
I don't know. What I would do, what I think would be more logical, is either introduce Amadeus Cho, who is the current Hulk in the comics.
Yeah, the totally awesome Hulk, yes.
Which, by the way, the Hulk, once again, same thing as Iron Man. There are others that have the Hulk's abilities in the Marvel, but they're not the Hulk. Only Bruce Banner is the Hulk. You know, I would really think, once again, going back to our talk about James Bond, with the socio-political climate that it is and wanting to push for more female leads and strong female characters, why not introduce She-Hulk?
I think it's only a matter of time.
And I love She-Hulk. She's one of my favorite female characters in all of comics.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading She-Hulk back when John Byrne was writing it, and she was breaking the fourth wall before Deadpool had been created.
Well, because Byrne was writing it. Shocker there. But if you're going to give her, if you bring her in to the movies and you give her any semblance of an origin story to explain how Jennifer has these powers, you've got to have Bruce around because he's the reason why. It's a blood transfusion. So yeah. And once again, I don't think Amadeus Cho is out of the realm possible because he's, yes, he's a man, but he's not white. He's Asian. And we know his mother exists in this universe because she's already been introduced in Age of Ultron. So, though she did get killed, I think, in that movie. So, and we didn't, it was never explained whether she had a child or not. So I don't know.
That's that type of thing that doesn't have to clearly be defined.
Yeah, that's I'm being ticky tacky now, ain't I?
The next one, we can be very brief here because we're going to talk more about her later. Black Widow / Natasha Romanoff. She's dead, yet she's also getting a movie. More on that later.
To be continued.
Right. Hawkeye / Clint Barton. I think it was firmly established in the last couple Avengers movies that all Clint Barton wants is he wants his family.
He's supposed to go home.
Yeah. So presumably, just my feeling, now that his family is back and he isn't so broken up over it, I think we'll be seeing him suit up again sooner rather than later.
Do you think we ever get a Kate Bishop Hawkeye?
I certainly wouldn't complain.
I'm one of those, if it happens, great. If it don't, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Scott Lang / Ant-Man. He's reunited with his daughter after 5 years. Chances are good we're going to see him again in some capacity.
Yes, and it seems like him and Hope are... In fact, I've even heard that publicly from Feige that anytime you see Ant-Man, you're going to see Wasp now. They are meant to be a team permanently from here on out. That's why they even named the second movie Ant-Man and the Wasp. So...
Agreed. And there's a image going around, a collage image, and I actually put it up on the Facebook for Geekville Radio. I want to give credit to where it came from, but I don't know exactly 100%. But with the whole face app fad that's going around with people aging themselves, somebody made a collage of all the Avengers with the age applied to them. So Thor was old, Spider-Man was old, and Hawkeye was old, and then Paul Rudd as Ant-Man still looks exactly the same. Just Paul Rudd hasn't aged in 30 years. You
know? No, he hasn't. He looks the same now as he did in Halloween 6, which is an abomination, and we won't discuss it anymore, not even on Examining the Dead. But that was the first time I ever remember seeing him in a movie, because that even predated Clueless. So
now, some of your favorites here, Doctor Strange, he was pivotal in helping the heroes turn the tide and defeat Thanos. Plenty more where that came from. We know we're getting another movie, so yeah, I don't think we really need to spend much time talking about him, right?
Mm-mm.
Right.
Hey, you know what else I love about Doctor Strange? We get Wong. I love Wong.
Oh, yeah. Excellent side character.
Yes.
Next three, I think we can kind of group them together, but Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, Bucky, and
Sam?
Yeah, Sam. We're going to see them again. We know we're getting series on Disney Plus. We're probably getting another Captain Marvel movie, and we know we're getting another Black Panther. So, you know, we really don't need to talk much about where they are now. But to wind up the talk here, this is the most interesting one for me right now, and that's Loki, because he seemingly was killed off in Infinity War. But then during Endgame, when they went back in time, Loki escaped. And they talk about how that opens up another parallel dimension. And I think that could be the out. If Loki never comes back, well, you can just say it was the same Loki. But now you can theoretically have Loki come back and be a threat again and have the explanation that, well, this was the Loki that escaped death because he went to another world or another dimension. I mean, do you think that's plausible?
Well, I think that's possible. And if you're a Tom Hiddleston fan, if you're a Loki fan, fear not. It's already announced. We know he's getting a standalone show on Disney Plus streaming as Loki. So if he doesn't show up in the MCU proper, that's okay, because I'm still going to get my Loki fix on the TV show, right?
Right, right. I agree wholly. All right, so let's move on to the movies here. It's no secret that there are several years of MCU films on the docket. Some of these we know about and fans have been clamoring for, like Black Widow and Guardians 3. Others, like the Eternals or Shang-Chi, these are more experiments, I think. It's my words, not theirs. But, you know, introducing the new elements. And there's like six or seven that we know about, could be more in the works. We got all the release dates between May 1st, 2020 and July 29th, 2022. And I'll have the links to the rumors that we talk about here in the show notes at geekvilleradio.com/239. Like I said at the beginning, we're not going to talk any hard spoilers. We're really only going to talk about what's rumored and what we expect based on the history of the comics. So we teased it a bit a few minutes ago with Black Widow, At long last, Scarlett Johansson is starring in her own Black Widow movie, something fans have been asking for since her debut in Iron Man 2. The problem here is she clearly sacrificed herself during Endgame. Now, there are images that have leaked from production where somebody was able to identify that the cars in production are from 2017. So that would match up with the film being set in between Civil War and Infinity War. So there may be an origin story of some sort here, but you had an idea train off air that we were talking about. So if you want to give what you think we might be getting as far as Natasha goes.
Sure. Sure. Well, let me address the car thing. Okay. This is fanboys being too much of fanboys. I know there was a big deal made on the Walking Dead television series about the fact that they were driving around a car that actually had not been even produced yet because it was like a 2000 whatever. It was a year before the actual year setting in when the apocalypse breaks out in Walking Dead. The reason that car was in the show was because it was a corporate sponsor of the show. And so I think we can be a little too – this is a fantasy world. Don't try to apply what happens in our world to that. So by saying, well, it's 2017 car, so it has to be set in 2017. Get over yourself, man. It could be set anywhere legitimately from 2008 or 9 to 2025 because all the cars look similar enough. You know what I'm saying? This is not – it's not like you're taking a car from the 1960s or the 1980s and putting it in there. That definitely makes it a period. You know, if you want to see period done, go back and watch Captain Marvel. Go back and watch Captain America First Avenger. Those are obvious period pieces where all the set pieces are meant to look like they're from that era because it's 20 years or more in the past. So that's the first thing I want to address. Now that I've got that off my chest and I'll get down off my soapbox, my suggestion is that if it is 2017, it would make sense. I think there are stories to be told between Civil War and the start of Endgame, or start of Infinity War, because Natty goes into hiding after Civil War because she won't sign the accords, you know, and she doesn't resurface publicly again until she shows back up at the Avenger Mansion after rescuing Wanda and Viz. We know this, you know, her and Steve and Sam are off their little, you know, they're the group that they call in to get them. So that's about a 2.5-3 year time period that she could be doing an entertaining something, you know, while she's in hiding, but still being the heroine that she is, something that will save the world, even though we might not know about it as the general population. She's a spy. She kind of does things in the shadows anyway. So yeah.
Right.
That's just where I would go. If you want to keep it that current, do that. I personally, they've kind of covered a little bit of her backstory in the flashback scene from Age of Ultron. You know, when Scarlet Witch has them all have their dark memories. That's only her as a child and a very, very young Scarlett Johansson. There's also stories to be told if you want to go that far back. The story I would tell, me personally, once again, it would depend on Jeremy Renner and what he would want to do. And I know right now he's touring with his musical career. He's touring, promoting his album. But if you could get Jeremy Renner, I think the story of her turning from the Russians to the Americans and Clint being pivotal in that, because that's already been revealed in this particular universe, that would be the story I would tell personally.
Yeah, that would be a good story. We could do an origin. It could take place over time. One thing that I want to put out there for people that may not be up on the comics, the current Natasha in the comics as Black Widow is effectively a clone. So if they bring that into the next series of movies, there's several ways they could go about it. You know, in that, were these Natashas existing at the same time? And I would even throw it out there, if we are going with a cloned Natasha, which one died then? The clone or the real one? You know,
I would think the Soul Stone wouldn't take the clone, personally. That's just me.
That's fair. That's sensible.
I think if you want to really stay true to the comics, which is – this is really geeky of me to say, but this is Geekville Radio, LMDs, life model decoys. This is a trope. This is a plot device that is already exists in the MCU, because the second half of – was it season 4 or season 3? Season 4. Season 3 or season 4 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That was the main crux. That was the subtitle of that half of the season. It was all about LMDs, so they do exist. And it's something that S.H.I.E.L.D. has always used in the comics, and she is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I've heard the argument when I've made that statement before. Or people argued with me. Well, the TV worlds and the movie worlds don't really mix, even though they are a shared universe. My response to that is, oh, really? Then why was Coulson brought back for Captain Marvel?
Right.
They just because Feige doesn't really want to do anything with the TV stuff doesn't mean that they don't all exist in the same universe. There's too many breadcrumbs dropped in the TV shows referring to the movies to not believe that. And there's even been a few breadcrumbs dropped in the movies that refer back to the TV, you know.
Right.
Powers Booth character at the end of First Avengers. What's his name? What was the evil doctor with Von Strucker? He was from Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know. Right. So there have been references from the TV to the movies. They just have been a lot less of the ones from the movies on TV, but they exist.
Right, right. Agreed. Now, supporting cast, we do have David Harbour, who we all know and love from Stranger Things. Rachel Weisz, who I believe she was in The Mummy, I think?
She was in The Mummy.
Yeah. And then Florence Pugh. I hope I'm saying that last name right. It's not on the IMDb page that I've seen, but the rumor that is going around is that Florence will be playing Yelena Belova, who is another Black Widow, in addition to Natasha. And currently in comics, they've brought her back under the name Crimson Widow, you know, kind of that evil alter ego type thing. So if they're going that route, you know, that might fit with the whole clone idea.
Right. Well, first off, I think the production pronunciation is Pugh. I don't want to correct you, but I think that's okay. Right.
It could be.
Thanks, Pugh. And what was the character in Agent Carter, the second season of Agent Carter, that was the original Black Widow, even before Natty, like the 1940s, 50s version?
Yeah.
So once again, there's a way you could go. This isn't brought up in the movies, but in the comics, the Natasha Romanoff character, I believe, has been cybernetically enhanced and also had small doses of a Soviet version of their version of the super soldier serum, which explains her slow aging and her heightened reflexes. Isn't that your understanding as well?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a version, I forget what it's called, but yeah, you're right. It was essentially a Russian attempt at the super soldier serum.
Right. And there is a group, that is essentially the Russian Avengers that go back to that Cold War era in the comics, that now that you know the communism has fallen in that part of the world, they still exist as characters in Marvel comics. It's a Red Guardian, which is kind of like their version of Captain America, and I can't remember all of them. I just remember he was the leader of the team. Crimson Dynamo, which was kind of the Soviet version of Iron Man. You know the group I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah, I forget the exact name, but I did double check. I believe the character you're talking about is Dottie/Dorothy Underwood. I think that is the character.
It.
Yeah,
I think you're right. And then there's that's another one of the Russian ones. He's kind of like their version of the Hulk. He's a huge grizzly bear.
Right. Human and Crimson Dynamo, I think, is who you're meaning about.
That's what I said. He was like their version of Iron Man, but right. They all still exist in the comics, you know, and if you didn't live through the Cold War, it's kind of hard to explain, but both of us did, so we get it, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, not to, once again, I said I don't want to give too many spoilers, especially to you, Seth, because I know you've got about 3 episodes left in Stranger Things 3, which I have finished. I binged it when it dropped on July 4th. And we will be doing a review of it in the next Gruesome Twosome on the next episode of Examine the Dead. Cheap plug. There is a major occurrence with the character of Hopper that David Harbour plays. Now that I know that he's, and I had forgotten, I'd heard it, but I forgot he is scheduled to be in this new, Black Widow movie, might explain why they did what they did at the end of Stranger Things 3 with his character. I'll leave it at that. Cause those of you that haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it, but
right.
major happenings for Jim Hopper in Stranger Things 3. And since it's the same actor, David Harbour, I can get why, you know. And right. Once again, this will make David Harbour one of those interesting actors who will have done a DC and a Marvel movie. Because if you remember, he plays one of the government officials in the Suicide Squad and the Batman versus Superman. He's a higher up in the government. He just doesn't look like Jim Hopper because he's clean shaven. And if you didn't know who he was, you wouldn't know that. But that's a minor role in the DCEU, and this is going to be a major role as a villain in the MCU. So. That's a pretty impressive list when you look at the people that have done both, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, again, not confirmed, but the rumor is that he will be playing Taskmaster.
Right.
Which would be really interesting because he's one of those villains that has always been like, I don't really want to call him a B-lister, but the fans love him, but he's never gotten that mainstream appeal or mainstream treatment in a big production. Well,
it's Marvel. Look at what they did with Guardians, which were almost, they weren't even B, they were like C-listers.
Yeah.
And now they're huge. So, I mean, come on. It's Marvel. They don't screw the Pooge a lot, except for Inhumans, and of course they don't even mention that, but we as fans won't let them forget, which I still hate, because I love the Inhumans, and Black Bolt, so cool. I hate that flopped. Who doesn't want to see like a 20-foot-high, huge teleporting bulldog that'll lick you to death? Come on, these Lockjaw's awesome. Anyway, I digress.
Now, we talked a little about him earlier. Doctor Strange, we know we're getting a Doctor Strange 2. I think it's a pretty safe bet that Baron Mordo will be the villain. It is out there that actor playing Baron Mordo, I just can't pronounce his name, he is returning, and then Nightmare will also be part of the story as well. So you know more about Doctor Strange than I do.
Let me pronounce the actor's name. Chitwith Okafor. He is the actor who plays Baron Mordo. If you haven't seen Doctor Strange, he probably got his most buzz in Hollywood in the lead role of 12 Years a Slave. I first remember him in the movie 2012, which was a Roland Emmerich disaster movie about the end of the world in 2012, you know, because of the Mayan calendar. Remember that 7 years ago when everybody was fascinated with that? But anyway, oh, yeah. I think he does a great job. Once again, Baron Mordo is a great example of a character. Ethnicity doesn't matter because Baron Mordo is not an African descended man in the comics. He looks maybe more Asian or Eurasian, probably. Like central to Eastern Europe, you know, right on the Asian border. But he does a great job. He's always put a good guy, so it's going to be interesting. And he was a good guy until the post credit scene in Doctor Strange 1. So seeing him as a pure villain is going to be interesting. I think he's a good actor, so he'll pull it off. Nightmare is a demon, very powerful demon. Much more of a Ghost Rider bad guy than a Doctor Strange. But Ghost Rider and Doctor Strange, They kind of play basketball on the same court, if you know what I mean. that mystical side of the Marvel universe. So anytime you hear of villains that Doctor Strange is going to come up against, there's a handful of other Marvel characters you can bet are going to have a run in with that same villain. And Ghost Rider's one of them. Just it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Damian Hellstrom or Son of Satan's another one that's probably going to have a run in with him. Blade. You get the idea, the mystical side of the...
Right, absolutely. Black Panther 2, it is official that Ryan Coogler will be returning to write and direct. No
excellent.
Real story given. I personally don't care that we don't have a story yet or not. I'm probably going to be seeing this movie. The only rumor that I think is unconfirmed at this point that's out there is that Michael B. Jordan may be in the film in some capacity. That doesn't necessarily mean...
Killmonger's
is going to live, you know, it could be flashback or something to that effect. But I think given that Marvel has done a lot of work on the comics and to make Black Panther an A-lister, and they have now a rogues gallery effectively for Black Panther, or at least more of one that they had before.
Right.
We're probably going to get, I would say, at least two or three more Black Panther movies on top of him being in other Avengers movies.
Right. I mean, if you go to the classic Black Panther, he didn't have much of a rogues gallery. And like you said, with their increased emphasis on his character in the comics over the last, three to five years, I'd say, they've expanded his rogues gallery. But if you go back to his classic, he really only had four major bad guys. Man-Ape, which is M'Baku, who's a good guy now in the MCU. Ulysses Klaue, who they killed off. Eric Killmonger, who they killed off, and the Augustine Duloc version of the Black Knight. Now, he hasn't been introduced, so they could introduce him. But he's a really way out there kind of late 60s, early 70s era of comic character. And if you've read comics, you know what I mean. This was the hippie era. There were a lot of psychedelics being taken by those reading the comics and those producing the comics. He's essentially a reincarnated version of like the Arthurian Black Knight who rides a flying horse, who's attacking the king of a fictional African country. Yes, I know it makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
But darn it, looks cool.
But damn it, it looked cool.
Right.
And so, you know, like I said, there were a lot. Remember, there were a lot of psychedelics being used in the era that he was introduced into Black Panther. So if they want to go that route, I'm sure they could you know, they could modernize up the character, make him more maybe like a terrorist or an arms dealer, and just his code name's the Black Knight, instead of going with the legitimate ride a flying horse, has a lance and a sword Black Knight that we saw in the comics. But, you know, who knows? Right. And they might not even bring him in at all. They might bring in one of the newer villains. You don't know, you know?
Right. One of the rumors that's going around, I don't know if it's a fan theory. I'll have a link at the show notes. Once again, geekvilleradio.com/239. And this actually would tie things more into Spider-Man, because we really don't have much to say about Spider-Man because the existing movie's already out. But right. With Spider-Man, I think it's a pretty safe bet, without giving anything away, that they're slowly building towards the Sinister Six. Like, that's going to be a future Spider-Man movie. And one of the rumors is that they're trying to work Kraven into it. And Kraven's definitely one of those characters. I don't think ethnicity matters. There is actually speculation that this Black Panther may be where we get Kraven, and he's actually from Wakanda, which I have no problem with that.
Which is weird, because traditionally he's Russian, which would mean he'd have to be a white guy, because I just don't know many darker skinned people that are native to you know, Siberia running around. But I digress. I mean, he is a character. If you tweaked his origin story, it would make sense, because at the end of the day, Kraven is Kraven the Hunter. He's a big game hunter. Well, where do most big game hunters go? They don't go to Russia. They go to Africa. So, yeah. Yeah. If you want to make him a Wakandan, that actually kind of makes sense, you know?
Right.
Do we get the traditional costume, though, with the cool-ass lion's head vest thing he wears?
Yeah, leopard skin or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, I used to have concerns about that because, you know, I lived through the Tobey Maguire, Willem Dafoe, that god-awful costume they put Willem Dafoe. It took an actor, with the chops of Willem Dafoe to not make that completely and utterly ridiculously stupid, you know, because that costume was that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But after seeing what they did with Mysterio's costume, I have a little more hope. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. I will say, completely unrelated to anything, it's probably a bit old now, but if they were to have made a Spider-Man movie in the late 90s, early 2000s, Ian McShane would have knocked Kraven out of the park, because he just looks like Kraven.
Yes, he does. And if you've seen Deadwood, yeah, where he's got the little bit of the thin mustache and the goatee, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, he would have been awesome.
Next up, probably delayed for a bit, but we are getting Guardians of the Galaxy 3 after much controversy. James Gunn's returning to write and direct, which is not to pat ourselves in the back, but we called that one. We figured it was going to happen. Most of the cast will be returning. We don't know for sure whether Thor will be involved, although I think it's a pretty safe bet given how, again, Endgame ended. Whether it will spin off to As Guardians of the Galaxy, we don't know. There is the rumor of Mark Hamill that he will provide a voice. And I think you were the one that told me, Train, that you heard that he might be the High Evolutionary, right?
Right. Which would make sense if you know the craziness that is the cosmic world of Marvel and who the High Evolutionary is as a character. That, and if they do the High Evolutionary, I'm get a feeling it's probably going to be more voice work for Mark than it will be. Maybe it might be mocap. But I don't think the High Evolutionary is going to be him in a costume. I think it's going to be a CGI mocap thing, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
Just don't give us Galactus as a cloud. That's all I got to say.
Amen to that. Now, one that was made official literally like the day or two before we went to record, we got the confirmation that we are getting a fourth Thor film, and that Taiki I'm probably butchering that name too, but yeah.
YTT.
Okay.
You gotta say the TT twice.
but he will be writing and directing the next movie, just like he did with Ragnarok. I think that's very welcome news. We don't think we need to spend too much time on that, but I think we agree that that's all good news, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the comedic beats that he has infused into the Thor character that has been done, as we talked earlier, very, very, you know, well by Chris Hemsworth, Chris Hemsworth himself has embraced. I think that's not that far off from James Gunn. So if he does show up in Guardians 3,
I think James Gunn's vision of things and Waititi's vision of things, I think they're very similar, and I think they mesh well together. I think you agree, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Serious, but a little bit of tongue-in-cheek.
Now, that brings us to the end of the established ones that we know about. Like, when I say established, I mean characters we've met before, so to speak. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's others that we're going to talk about next that are mostly new characters. It's what I said at the top of the show about being a possible experiment. And the first one, yeah, we'll jump on that next since it makes sense, and that is the Eternals. And I freely admit, and this is what I tell people when they ask me in real life about the Eternals, the cosmic part of Marvel hasn't been that appealing to me. I mean, I do read some stuff just out of necessity, but
to
I don't
the
have
Fantastic Four guy. They do a lot of cosmic stuff in the Fantastic Four. I thought.
Here and there, but you know, so I really don't know the textbook knowledge of the Eternals. I believe Thanos has a callback to them, as well as Adam Warlock, and I think we're going to get Adam Warlock in Guardians 3. But the thing we do know is Angelina Jolie headlines the cast. The Eternals are kind of like the legend and myth, so to speak. And we do have basically a group that we don't really know firsthand, like how powerful they might be. I mean, maybe there's something out there. But these are the type of characters like Titans, the Watcher, things like that. They're these next level cosmic beings, I think, is probably the best way to say it. And Millie Bobby Brown, again, going back to Stranger Things, is allegedly in negotiations. I don't know if she's supposed to play the same character that Angelina Jolie does, but my hunch is we'll get a connection to Thanos and we'll get a connection to Adam Warlock. Do you think I could be onto something with that?
Yeah, another one I've heard, and it wouldn't shock me, is I've also heard maybe an Ego, the living planet. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's Kurt Russell. We all know that I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan. You are as well. So seeing Kurt Russell back, you wouldn't complain, would you?
No, not at all.
And I know he effectively, quote unquote, died at the end of Guardians 2, but we just mentioned earlier in this episode, it's the comics world. No one's truly dead, right?
Right. And I think what they might do, we talked about it off mic, because there are different species of these characters in the Marvel universe, you know, Titans, Eternals, Celestials, things like that. They just might wind them all up and put them in one movie and just call them Eternals, you know?
Right. Right. Cause I've never been that fascinated with the cosmic side of things either. Outside of the Inhumans. I'm an admitted Inhumans mark. But other than that, I haven't really delved into the cosmic realms of the Marvel world. So, I stay with the more earthbound and obviously the mystical side of things. So, and even some of the mystical characters can kind of cross over with the cosmic stuff. Cause I mean, even though like say Mephisto is obviously a mystical character cause he's a demon, he has powers on the level of like an Eternal or a Celestial. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we're talking characters that are Thanos level or even more powerful than Thanos to give you an idea of how powerful these characters are. They, as you like to say, they could make Superman say ouch.
Right.
So yeah, they're badasses all the way.
Now the last one of name that is listed as on the docket is another one of these experimental things. It'll be interesting to see how it does fit in the rest of the Marvel universe, because even in the Marvel comics proper, he's not what I would call an A-lister in the comics. He pops in every now and then, and that's Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu. I think somebody like Danny Rand, you know, Iron Fist, is probably higher in the pecking order when it comes to the martial arts. But Shang-Chi does have his followers, and he's mingled with some heavy players. So have you read any Master of Kung Fu comics?
No, but I kind of know where they're going with Shang-Chi. I think, just my personal opinion, I think that, you know, it's comic book world, comic book editors, not just writers and artists, but editors always want to have a martial artist, like an elite martial artist on their roster of good guys. Because every imprint I can ever think of has them, whether it's DC or Marvel or even the smaller stuff like Dark Horse and Image. They all have like that elite martial artist. I think in the last
5-7 years. I mean, I think the character himself in print's only about 3 years old. I think he was introduced and created in the socio-political climb we've been talking about this episode with an attempt to diversify and move away. I think at the end of the day, this is not politically correct, but I think they just thought Danny Rand was too white to be the guy who was the elite martial artist. So they wanted to create an Asian hero, and thus they created Shang-Chi, which I find unusually ironic and a bit hypocritical that you don't want to go with stereotypes, but you think your martial artist has to be somebody from Asia. But I digress. Anyway, right. With that being said, I'll get off my soapbox once again. I think Shang-Chi has been my – and remember, I'm a big Iron Fist. So I'm trying not to look through rose-colored glasses here. I think Marvel, the as a company, has tried to downplay Iron Fist and play up Shang-Chi as the top martial artist in their world for that very reason. And they have done so in the print. So if they're going to do it in movies – I get it, and I hate to say this, but I don't think anybody who watches the Netflix stuff will cry the disappearance of Finn Jones from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I hate to say that, but it's true, you know?
Yeah. I liked the character. I liked the shows. I just never seriously expected them to make it to the big screen, so it doesn't surprise me that if that's the idea, they're going this route instead of Danny Rand.
Let's be honest. The best character in that world is Jerry Hollowell, who actually is in all the Netflix stuff because she's the attorney to all of them, and Ward, the bad guy turned good guy, who's really a supporting character, you know, and Ward's the kind of character that I don't think works well on the movie screen, because he works so well because you can delve into his characters over a 10 or 12 or 13 episode arc that you can't do in a 2-hour movie. You know, and is he really necessary for the stories they're telling? It's a very personal story because of his personal relationship with Danny, the why it works there, you know. So, you know, I'll be interested to see who they cast as Shang-Chi, because as a fan, as our listeners, as I've talked about on many occasions, as one of the biggest Bruce Lee fans you'll ever find, Hollywood has been trying to recreate, reproduce, find the next Bruce Lee for ever since he died in 71, and they've never done it, and they're probably going to try to do it in the casting here again, and they're probably going to fail again. And that's not taking anything away from Jet Li and these Jackie Chan, these other great Asian martial arts movie stars. They're not Bruce Lee, though. Bruce Lee, he's like Elvis and Johnny Cash and Dusty Rhodes. There's only one.
Right.
This is what it is.
Now, the last two we're going to talk about, we don't have them named or confirmed, but they're in that safe realm or safe wheelhouse, you might say. And that is Captain Marvel 2. I think, like we said at the top, we're probably going to get at least one more movie of her, and we're probably going to get her guesting in a lot of the other movies. We may get the Monica Rambeau Captain Marvel for the next movie, because it'll be set current day, not 1995. And the other one would be Avengers 5. You know, it's not officially announced, but I think we'll get one. I am curious, I think we'll start to wrap up with this talk, as far as what they will do for Phase 4, because usually that is what gets wrapped up in the Avengers proper movies. And given what we've been getting, you know, we now have Skrulls introduced, Skrulls as regular, I can't help but think that they might bring elements of Secret Invasion in, where some of the regulars wind up being evil Skrulls all along.
Well, you know, I thought that too. I also think that's a little bit of fanboying, especially for you, because I know how big a fan you are of that storyline. You're a bigger fan of that storyline than I am, even though I did like the storyline. I thought that, and then Captain Marvel came out, and they essentially made the Skrulls the downtrodden good guys who are misunderstood, and they made the Kree the bad guys.
Right.
And part of the reason, full disclosure to our listeners, part of the reason I've never been a big fan of the cosmic side of Marvel has been the Kree-Skrull war is massively important to the you know, the story of the cosmic side of Marvel. Throw the Shi'ar Empire in there, and you pretty much got the three major players, you know? And I have never been able to figure out as a reader who was really supposed to be the good guys and who was really supposed to be the bad guys. As they started going into these shades of gray, they made all three of the races kind of seem like butts.
Right.
I mean, for a while, the Kree were definitely the good guy. The Skrulls were definitely the bad guys, especially in the Fantastic Four stuff, you know, with the Super Skrull and everything. But then it got started getting gray, and then they confused it and grayed it up even more with making the Skrulls very sympathetic in the Captain Marvel movie. I don't know where they're going anymore. And I've said before, I like white hats and I like black hats. And the cosmic side of Marvel doesn't seem to have that. And that makes it hard for me to get my teeth into it. Call me a simpleton. I don't care. You know, it's just, I just want that. And I think now that they're good guys, how do you turn them into being imposter? Unless you want to say that you don't want to turn them into bad guys. You want to say that they were good guys all along and they were just trying to help the Earth out. And they were impersonating, and because they're aliens, they had these what looked like superpowers to us, but weren't. They were just part of their natural powers as Skrull. You know, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I know a lot of people. You're not alone in feeling that way, Seth. I've heard a lot of geeks speculate. Oh, they gave us Secret Invasion. Nah, I don't think so. I think you're fanboying too hard there. I think you're wishing for something that's not going to happen. Once again, it's just one of those storylines that really works well for a year long, multi-title spanning crossover event for a print.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to translate into three or four movies. Just saying.
Right. Agreed. Now, another name I'm just throwing out there because it fits with the whole Infinity saga, because that was one of the legendary 90s runs. From the 80s, one of the biggest Marvel crossovers we had was Secret Wars. Now, you kind of need to have Doctor Doom involved there in order for that to work. Obviously, you need the Beyonder. But it wouldn't surprise me if that's where they go. Maybe something with Kang the Conqueror.
I'm on Team Kang, man. I want Kang in there. I love Kang the Conqueror.
And then, who knows, we could get World War Hulk or from the 80s Evolutionary War if we're getting the High Evolutionary. A lot of ways they could go. But if I were a betting man, I know you just said it's fanboying, but if I were a betting man, I'll just put my chips in the Secret Invasion lot. So I don't know if you had any care.
Of all the ones you named, I think it's the most likely. If that helps. The other one that I've heard speculated, and I don't know how they go about it. I think you said off mic you had heard was that they were going to do a Thunderbolts movie. Have you heard that one as well?
It's one that's been planned. You know, Nova is another one that we've gotten from time to time that they're going to do.
Yeah, that one I keep hearing Nathan Fillion attached to, which I think no geek would be upset with Nathan Fillion being in the MCU. I just don't see Nathan at his age being able to pull off the Nova from the comics because that Nova is young. He's like, what, 19, 20 years old? But he could be, if they do go that route, I could see Nathan as the member of the Nova Corps that when it's destroyed by Thanos gives all the powers of the Nova Corps to the one character, and I cannot remember his name right now, that becomes the young Nova that becomes a hero here on Earth. You know, the mentor. Maybe the Jude Law role from Captain America, you know. Captain Marvel, except he doesn't ever turn into a bad guy. He just dies. But if you want to bring Nathan Fillion into the MCU in any capacity, I'm not going to complain. Are you?
No, I don't. I unless they try to make him a total un-Nathan Fillion-like character, you know, then I don't think anybody's going to complain.
Anything you cast Nathan Fillion, he has to be a smartass. Okay, he's really good at that. You know,
yeah.
I've often said no one else could play Ash Williams in the Evil Dead franchise, but Bruce Campbell. Nathan Fillion might be the only guy that even had a fighting chance, okay? He's the only other guy that might have had a fighting chance. And he's almost a little too good looking for the role, but I digress. As far as the Thunderbolts go, what I'm hearing is if they do it, they want to kind of make it, the analogy I've heard is going to be the MCU's version of the Suicide Squad, which is kind of what they are in the comic.
Right. Yeah, they were villains that became anti-heroes.
And the names I'm hearing are names of characters that have already been introduced in the MCU, and they're the villains that didn't get killed off at the end of their movies. So it's, I'm hearing like Baron Zemo. I'm hearing Ghost. I'm hearing the Leader. I'm hearing Abomination. I'm hearing, of course, you know, General Ross, Thunderbolt, Thaddeus Ross. So we know Zemo, Ghost, Abomination, and Leader are all four characters that are in the MCU. They all have been laid out there in their standalone movies, and they weren't killed off like, you know, say like Hela or Malekith or you know, Red Skull. And we know where Red Skull is now, too. He didn't really die either. Though Red Skull has never been part of the Thunderbolts in the comics, and I do not think he'll be he's just too evil, you know. Like Zemo, the way they presented Zemo in Civil War, that seems like a natural progression to being an anti-hero because he actually has a pretty sympathetic story, you know. you can see why he blamed the Avengers and Tony Stark in particular for what happened to his family and why he would want to see the Avengers destroyed. You know, it's not that his motivations were wrong. He just went about it in the wrong way. I guess you agree with that.
Those are the best villains. Yeah.
He's definitely way different than he is presented in the comics. The comics, he's pure evil. He is an agent. He's an agent of Hydra for a while. He's a kind of a neo-Nazi, and then he has a change of heart. Well, there's not a need for that dramatic because he kind of was already on that. Ghost, once again, I think is also a very sympathetic character. The way she's presented in Ant-Man and the Wasp, you feel sorry for her at the end of the movie. You know, she's just trying not to die, and she's still mourning the death of her parents. And she does blame Hank for what happened. So she's not that far off. Hank kind of half-heartedly admits it was his own arrogance that got her parents killed, you know? So, right. Yeah. I would enjoy seeing something like that. I just said I don't like Shades of Grey, but I do like the Suicide Squad in print, and I do like Thunderbolts. You just got to do it right. You got to give me a reason why this Black Cat's become a... I'm a wrestler, man. I'm used to baby faces turning heel and heels turning baby face. Okay? That is something, that's a concept I can get my mind around. But unlike what you see on wrestling today, when I grew up watching wrestling, they explained why a guy changed, you know? And if they do that in these movies, then I'm fine with that. You know, give me a good reason why. It's not nearly as gray as you think it is, I think is what I'm saying.
Right. Right. To finish on the wrestling analogy, a perfect example was the NWO. Hulk Hogan, the red-blooded American hero for years, dropped the leg on Randy Savage, turned heel, and then cut that killer heel promo to close out that show that ended with Tony Schiavone saying, "You can go to hell, Hulk Hogan, straight to hell." One of the best sign-offs of all time. You know?
Yeah, there's a little older, more obscure one, but WWE Network has just dropped 1985 and 86 of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, which is what I grew up watching, right when I was watching it. And I had forgotten this storyline, or at least I remembered the storyline, but I couldn't remember how it came to be. Cowboy Ron Bass was established as one of the top heels in this area. He was the Mid-Atlantic champion, and he was this vicious, rough, you know, and tough cowboy heel gimmick who was a bully. And James J. Dillon, this is right before the Four Horsemen was formed, was his manager. And Ron Bass, the man himself, actually went on a tour of Japan. And so he wasn't on Mid-Atlantic television for a few weeks. In the interim, James J. Dillon brought in a new young protege in the Nature Boy, Buddy Landell. And when Ron Bass came back from Japan, they addressed on the television that Ron Bass had been in Japan wrestling. And he came back and he had on a black glove and he had developed the Claw as his finisher while he was over there. And there was a schism simply because he felt while he was gone that James J. Dillon had kind of forgotten him and put all his chips behind Buddy Landell. They naturally had a feud. Ron Bass was a good guy all of a sudden. And it wasn't more simple than just, you forgot about me and you made me a promise and you screwed me as a manager. See, that's a simple story, right?
Right.
But it makes sense. You got an experienced veteran in Ron Bass. He's wrestling with Buddy Landell and they're having great matches. And it's amazing. This guy who just 6 weeks before he got off television was vehemently being booed by the fans, puts the claw hold on James J. Dillon and punches Buddy Landell and the crowd's now screaming for him and, you know, that's it. And then he goes and cuts a promo and offers his apologies to Dusty Rhodes, the top babyface in the territory, and says, "I'm sorry, we used to be friends. You need a partner, you need a friend, I'm here." And Dusty said, "Right now, I don't want to hear about it, but I appreciate the offer." That's all it takes. There's logic there, folks. If they do that in these movies, if they do this in Thunderbolts, then I'm fine with it. And I think they can, because I think the stories of the established characters are already there like that. That's what I'm saying. I'm sorry for the long-winded wrestling analogy, but hey. I love wrestling, especially when it's done good like that.
Absolutely. Now, that's going to wrap up our talk here on Marvel Phase 4. We're going to be talking about it again, obviously, because you know it's just not going away. But no. I do want to thank you folks for listening to episode 239 of Geekville Radio. We are at geekvilleradio.com. Geekville Radio is the handle for all the social media, Twitter and Facebook. You can also respond via Discuss on Geekville Radio. And we want to hear from you folks. If there's anything you want to see in Marvel Phase 4, anything you want us to talk about, or just let us know how we're doing. We are on Apple Podcasts. Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever great podcasts can be found. So give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a review, because as I always like to say, I'm always looking for ways to improve the show, and I value feedback, especially when it's genuine. So, Train, if anybody wants to get in touch with you about anything wrestling or Marvel-oriented, where can they find you?
I can always be reached on Twitter at crazytrain_JB. I love to discuss things. I know I have some controversial views. If you disagree with me, send me a tweet, and I will try to explain my reasoning logically. And maybe we can come to an agreement, even if it's just to agree to disagree.
That's only fair. So we're going to turn off the power here at the Geekville Radio Studios, and I don't think we're going to have to wait too long to find out how right or wrong we are in some of these predictions, because right around the corner we got San Diego Comic-Con, and then shortly after that we got D23, so we're probably going to get a lot of Marvel news in those upcoming weeks, and we're going to cover as much as we can about San Diego Comic-Con. Those episodes will be coming when we're able to fit them in, yeah, next week sometime. This has been Geekville Radio, and we will talk to you folks again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the host and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved.